It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about it, the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 of the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Yay!
There they are.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, bus people. Great.
Thank you. Yeah, great weather. Oh, they just kind of faded up. Great weather. Great, time to be out and celebrating the fall.
The autumn, the fall. That's right. In autumn, Florida, autumn this fall. Is great. We've had our 3 days of fall. Now it's going to start warming up again.
That's right. Back to the rain again.
But we were happy during our 3 days of fall here.
it was great. I mean, inland it was in the upper 40s. It hit 50. It was 56 in the morning when I went to work. It was incredible. I mean, I just wanted to stay outside, and then the sun came up and it went back up in the upper 80s. So forget it.
That's the same thing here. We get up in the morning, nice cool, go out to get the paper, drive out to the winery, and which is inland about 25 miles, and nice and cool. But then the sun comes up and I'm glad the building's air conditioned.
Yeah. But you're further north than where we are, so you're up in the mountainous area of Florida.
Yeah. The mountainous area of Central Florida. Yeah.
It's 120 feet, I think, or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Stand on a fire ant mound, it's 120 feet, 3 inches on it. You know.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. Snow capped, or they don't get snow capped this time of year. You wait until January, December, somewhere around there?
Yeah, right. The fire ant mounds start getting a little snow cap.
Maybe that's not snow cap. Maybe it's seven dust or some kind of ant kill.
Yeah, sand. Oh, yeah, that's it. You know, we mistake it for snow. It's sand.
It's scenic. Welcome to All About Wine, anyway.
Let's get back on the subject here. We're talking about wine. Ohio tonight.
Hey. Oh. And we have two guests coming up later. I'll go get them, get one of them in a minute, and... So that'll be cool. Two guests coming up tonight from the Ohio area that we're going to be talking about. So, excellent. Let's get started.
Yeah. Okay. Southwestern Ohio, actually. Well, while Mike's going to leave shortly here and go call our first guest. Whenever we start a new state, we always like to tell a little bit about it, where it is, how it is, elevations, roads, all that stuff. Ohio is our next state tonight. If you're not familiar with the state of Ohio, it is located in the eastern part of the country. Well, actually, they're calling that the Midwest now. I don't know why. I guess Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee are now classified as Midwest. And I grew up in Missouri and always called that Missouri, Kansas, and all that Midwest, but I don't know. Well, no editorializing on that. Ohio is bordered on the north by Lake Erie and Michigan. On the west by Indiana, on the south by Kentucky, on the southeast by West Virginia, and on the east by Pennsylvania. It is farming community more than anything else. Rather flat, not a whole lot of hills, especially in the western part of the state. The eastern part of the state, you got more hills and more of a hilly climate. The southwest area we're talking about tonight has got some hills. Counties, a lot of small counties throughout the state. They got a total of 88 counties spread throughout the state of Ohio. All of them, nothing big, nothing large. And all of them, I don't believe there's a dry county in Ohio. I understand that there is, and everything is open. Some states do have dry counties. Columbus, the capital, and it's pretty much just about in the middle of the state, a little bit off center of the state, a little west of center, but it's about the middle of the state. Major cities, you got Cincinnati in the far southwest corner, and right around Cincinnati is where we're talking tonight. Little northeast of Cincinnati is the booming town of Dayton, and it's almost to the point now where Cincinnati and Dayton touch each other. They both expanded so much with suburbs out of either direction, so it's almost like one great big city there. In the northwest, Toledo, Ohio, the booming town of Toledo. Going, still staying on the lake up there, you've got Cleveland, which is further east, and that includes all the suburbs, Euclid, Cleveland Heights, Lakewood, and all those little towns. Major highways run all back and forth across Ohio. You got I-90 on the northern edge. I-70 runs right through the center of the state and bisects right into Columbus. 71 through the center of the state, out of Columbus and from Cleveland down to Cincinnati. 75 on the western part of the state. These are all interstates. 77 on the eastern part of the state. 76 is also in the east part of the state. I-80 over there. You've got 74 at the far west corner. A bunch of interstates in that area. They crisscross all through the state. Elevation, not a real high state. The highest point in Ohio is 1,550 feet. That is at Campbell Hill. They don't even call it a mountain. They call it a hill. Here, a hill. In Florida, a hill is the Fire Ant Mound. But there, they actually have a hill that's 1,550 feet tall. The lowest point in Ohio is 455 feet. And I believe that's in the northeastern part of the state. No, I have... Yeah, northeastern or north central part of the state. I'm not sure. It doesn't really say on this map. Bunch of rivers running all over Ohio. You've got the border of the southern part of Ohio, which is the Ohio River. That runs forms the entire southern border of Ohio between Ohio and Kentucky and West Virginia. Plus, you have a bunch of other rivers that flow into the Ohio River. That's pretty much the drainage, and the Ohio River then runs into the Mississippi River and dumps into the Gulf of Mexico. Everything in the northern part of the state of Ohio runs into the lakes up there, the Great Lakes. So it's either north or south on most of the rivers. A few of them run west into the other states, but mostly you got north and south rivers in it. The temperatures in Ohio range from very, very cold to very, very warm. So we've got just about every type of temperature that you can imagine that you want in the state of Ohio. Tonight we're going to be talking to a couple of people. Our first one is on the line here and ready for him to bring on and tell us about the winery. This is Seth Miranda from Miranda Nixon Vineyards and Winery. Seth, you there with us?
Yes, Ron.
Thank you for joining us tonight. We really do appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm come from the Ohio River Valley Appalachian in Brown County. We're southwest of Cincinnati, about an hour.
Thank you for bringing up that point, too. I was going to say that Ohio has quite a few AVAs. I was amazed about that. Mike and I were talking about it before we came on the air, and there's a lot of AVAs in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, we're the oldest AVA. At one time, prior to Civil War, was the largest wine-producing AVA in the United States.
Wow. So tell us about Miranda Nixon Winery and the start and how you came to be and all about the winery.
Yes, our operation sits on a fifth-generation family-owned tobacco farm that we transitioned to wine grapes in 2003. We opened our winery in 07 to the public with three varieties at a time. Now we have six different varieties we're growing. Our vinifera varieties are Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Chardonnay, and American varietals, Catawba, and Norton, and a French hybrid, Traminette, which Cornell developed.
So you grow a variety of everything else. How many acres do you have of everything?
We have 10 acres of everything right now.
All total 10 acres?
Yes, 10 acres.
Is everything on premises?
Everything's on premise. Tasting room's done in the Italian style. It overlooks all the vineyards there on the property.
Oh, cool. I'm pulling up your website here. Yeah, I can see. I mean, everything's right around the tasting room and all that. Do you live on property?
Yes, we do.
Oh, cool.
And it's my great grandfather purchased the farm about 100 years ago, and the whole reason used to be after Prohibition and the decline. There was a lot of wineries in the 1830s to the 50s, and Black Rock devastated the area. There was a rebirth, and of course, Prohibition. And tobacco was the main cash crop up until this past decade. And it was important to keep the family farm in the family and the only viable option to replace tobacco with wine grapes. So we've had a lot of success with, especially with our vinifera varieties, our Cab Franc, Cab Sauvignon, Chardonnays, and Norton. We just got a gold medal win the Midwest Wine Conference. It's a great appellation, great soils. We are in a continental climate, which is probably number one threat, but we've really do have a great site there, about a mile and a half above the High River Valley, so we have a great air drainage.
So you're just a mile and a half from the river itself?
Yes.
So you mentioned climate. Let's expand on that. What's your winter highs and lows and your summer highs and lows?
Usually we're in third week of January, usually coldest season for us. The average highs in the low 30s and lows in the 20s. But, of course, we do get some cold gaps from the north, and our big threat to winter injury to our vinifera from cold blast in the Arctic. And there's been record record lows. We do use a grape hoe on our site. We protect our graft unions and all our European varietals.
We haven't had any
serious events since 03, so, but there is events once out of 100 years, so.
Yeah, well, they say that 100 year every 3 or 4 years whenever they get great big floods up there, too.
Well, there's a lot of different 100 year events. Our soils are well drained, and the water, it had to be a 1 in a million year event for the floods to affect us, so, That's not an issue.
What is your soil?
We're the glacier event at the last ice age. So we're just slightly glaciated, less than a quarter mile means unglaciated soils to the south. So we got a unique situation where we got some of the glacial till on top, but you don't go very far to find unglaciated. And that's over broken limestone, quite a depth.
Oh. So it seems then that the ice age really gave the biggest influence to the soil in that area.
Well, we got some vineyards in the county that just to the south of me that are on English, and they will also.
Wow.
But the southern half of the county is well drained and generally sloped, and the field size, of course, smaller than what people typically think of Ohio. Some of the largest fields in the area would be 15 to 30 acres. That'd be a large field. So that's kind of the area you're looking at topographical wise, in between watersheds,
uh-huh.
The Ohio River.
So you say you're high enough that you don't get flooded then?
No. And our vineyard sites us on two watersheds, Red Oak Creek and Straight Creek, which are small tributaries to the Ohio River.
Oh. So you don't have to worry too much about watering then, do you?
No, we get enough annual rainfall. You know, if you want to compare Appalachians, I'd say closest comparison to us would be Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And Missouri gets more temperature variations than we do, which is problematic with winter injury and spring frost. We don't get as much of that as Missouri does. But varietal-wise, pretty much the same as Missouri wine production.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we talked to Missouri a few months ago on that and found that they've had some serious frost there, and it's a really late-season frost. You don't have to worry about that then.
Not as much. We do have late-season frost, but it's not as significant as in Missouri. Their continental climate's a lot more severe than ours. So you look at the data over the past, since records have been kept together, the temperature swings is more severe in Missouri than in our area.
So when do you get bud breaks?
Typical bud breaks middle of April. Chardonnay and Cab Franc, Norton, Catawba.
I guess by mid-April, you can still get a frost by mid-April. Maybe not you do. I mean, some areas there do get frost that late.
We had, 07 we had a frost event, but that was an unusual March where we had frost-free days from middle March till the Easter, which is in April that year. So we did have some frost damage on Cab Franc Chardonnay, which is
no damage.
But everybody, we had crop damage. So
yeah,
I mean, we're not immune to it, but it nowhere is. You know, everybody deals with that threat, but every year is different.
Do you have fans or anything that you try to keep it, or you just
Hey, we do have irrigation or run water on, but that event no. 07 lasted for 3 days. We didn't have enough water to come all the vines. And, you could actually damage your vines more if you don't keep constant water flow in them. Cause of sublimation for that. Yes. So that was a strange event. Yeah, that year we had bud break at the end of March. Everything heated up. And then we had the Easter freeze. Had a snow event. So,
wow!
I don't know what what's changed.
That was in 2004.
That was 2007.
2007.
Yeah, we ended up making some really great calves that year because the crop was so light. We had a lot of heat that summer. Ended up being one of the best vintages ever. We just didn't have enough of it to go around. Yeah, our 2007 calf we sold for $35 a bottle. And it sold out quick.
Wow.
And, people still talk about it.
Jeez,
it was Mother Nature gives and takes.
that she does. When do you get, or when do you harvest then?
We harvest Chardonnay This year, the second week of September, generally it's the first week of September, and our calf prop, we'll be pulling an alphabet this weekend on our younger vines.
Oh.
Older vines will be later next week. Then our calf sauvignon, depending on the weather, we'll leave it hang up until the third week of October.
Wow.
Generally, calf sauvignon ripens second week in October. But we're running, this year we had a great July and August with heat ingredients. It has been a wet summer, but skins are thicker, look a lot of good color out there, a lot of good flavors. But the cooler than usual September's, we're going to have some, you just don't know. This week's really been great here in the Harbor Valley in the 80s. And nice dry and September, October weather. Not perfect, so it's going to be a great vintage. But alcohol-wise, the 07, 08, 010 vintage is a real high alcohol. This could be more normal, more like Bordeaux.
Uh-huh.
Year. So we're excited about it. And weather holds up, we could really have some, probably one of the better Cab Sauvignon years we've had in the High River Valley.
Wow, that sounds...
Chardonnay's
going to
be
acceptable. So you, what do you age in oak or stainless steel? And if you use oak, what type?
We use 100% new oak on our calves. It's something we started this year.
French, American?
We do use some French oak, some hybrid barrels, mainly. 85% of ours is all new American oak. Canton Cooperage, Lebanon, Kentucky, just south of us. We like to stay local with as much resources as we can.
Yeah, you use the Cooperage down there in Kentucky then?
Yes, Canton Cooperage.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah, that's quite an operation.
We use all their Grand Cru barrels. So they've done a great job for us, and people come to recognize their oak flavors of our wine, so it's good. It's a good marriage.
And you are the winemaker? Is that your position there?
Yes, that's the one. I wear many hats. Winemaker, vineyard manager, but it's like I tell my customers, the wine's made in the vineyard. What we do in the winery is the only thing we can do in there is screw it up. So, we say, if you get the grapes ripe, I don't pay attention to the numbers. I go flavors, phenolics, seed colors, and I like to. I'll look at the numbers when I get in the winery. But if the flavors aren't there, it's not going to be in a wine. There's nothing we can do to put it in there. So
true.
So I pick based on that and nothing else. So.
Yeah, that's we've talked to a lot of different wineries, and you'd be surprised. Most wineries, most people who pick on, they just grab a grape, pop in their mouth, and taste it, and say it's ready or it's not ready. Just very few actually go in, use a refractometer or testing or anything else. They just when that's ready. That's
If you, some years the numbers are biased, shouldn't make you pick early. Like last year was a good example. We had a lot of heat in August, September. Your total acid level was low because the malic acid precipitated out. The Brix was high. All the numbers in came was right, but it wasn't physiologically right to pick on the numbers last year. You would pick 2 to 3 weeks too early.
Mm.
And I tell a lot of growers that, so... we're kind of rebuilt. Our motto is revitalizing the High River Valley one vine at a time, one glass of wine at a time. So, we like spreading the word. And it's not necessarily what the university say based on the numbers. You got to take the season into account that plays a role in that. And it's a lot bigger picture than just looking at what the refractometer or PA says. So, I hate to see people pick early, and instead of having a gold medal winner, having a tunnel going, you know.
Yeah.
I just let it hang a little bit longer. And I think I did that early on, you know, picked my numbers and talked to other winemakers making the same wine. Try to figure out for myself how to make better wine, so.
You know, that's the battle for all of us. I mean, I'm always, you know, looking at ways to improve the wines I'm making, all that, and you know, it's a constant evolution trying to improve it, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I understand that.
Yeah, it depends on the year. I mean, there's some years are mediocre. 2009 was a mediocre year for us. It was cool. What a cool summer we had on there. So. Wasn't the greatest Cab Sauvignon year, but we didn't make Cab Sauvignon. We made an off-dry red boil with our Cab that year. So, you got to take the year into account, and no 2 years are exactly alike. So, that's the challenge of it. But the wine made in the vineyard, not in the winery.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, that really has a lot to do with it. I don't know if you handle this end of it. I'm looking at some pictures. I see you on the picture here, so I just let you know. I actually have a visual of you now. the government.
I'm made for radio.
I know. Mike and I both agree. We are made for radio. Yeah. government, good, bad, indifferent, you wish they dropped dead, you're happy, you want to hug them. What is your opinion of the Ohio government toward wineries?
The local winery, we got the High Department of Agriculture under previous administration tried to inspect wineries as food processors, and putting us under food processing code, which posed a lot of problems. If you file a food processing code on wineries, you really couldn't use an oak barrel in a winery because it's not smooth and easily cleanable. The understanding of alcohol winemaking practices, nowhere in the code, but the High Department of Agriculture, the bureaucrats are too lazy to write. They have the authority to inspect this, but they're too lazy to write code like California and Oregon, more successful wine states, and they're unwilling to do that. So they try to impose food processing code. We've met with our legislature stuff, and it's still in limbo what they're going to do, but it really is a joke.
It sounds like it. So they're going to put the...
Put us as food processors.
As food,
which means
food
you
processor.
Send a, yeah, you can send a sanitary that has no concept what they're looking at to potentially as a food item. So they could potentially make me wash my Cabernet Sauvignon grapes, water them down, make a fruit juice out of them, you know. That's the potential.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I met with the new director of Heidi ODA a couple weeks ago, Kincaid Ridge Winery, and I did runs to the south of us, and he's adamant against it, too. And we haven't heard anything since, but, yeah, that's the same people, same stuff, and we're like, we're going to make the state the laughingstock of the union. I said, there's already code written, you know, like California, Oregon, even they accept them food processing code. I mean, my goodness. And they always talk from wearing hairnets while we're crushing. I mean, you think of it. I mean, it's laughable, but it is a threat to the production of high-end wine.
Well, yeah,
and, that was our point.
I laugh because of the stupidity of it. I mean, it's laughable when you think about it, but it's scary that they would even consider it.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not against inspection. The only way to, you know, look at a winery, the chance of somebody getting sick is from adulteration. If they won't inspect for that, I don't have a problem. They don't even have a lab set up to test for alcohol. If you read Ohio law, they can't even take a sample of alcohol. That has to be liquor control. So what are they going to do?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And,
we were talking to a winery in, Mike, you might remember. I offhand, I don't, but somewhere, might have been New York, where they said that They couldn't ship but certain bottles to Ohio. And I called them and I said, why can't you ship? And they said, because Ohio has to approve every label we ship to the state.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, we have to. We can actually get held up in Ohio if we don't get Ohio label approval for a federally approved label.
So Ohio has another.
Yeah, we have to get approval from Ohio too. It's just a money grab, revenue enhancement. So that's part of business. They haven't changed that, but they're always looking to. Seems like bureaucrats are looking to increase revenues. They don't care who's back there on. And our hard part of agriculture has become real bureaucratic as far as revenue enhancement. And it's pathetic.
Unbelievable.
So, but fortunately, I'm close enough to Kentucky. And here's the ironic thing. You know, they can set up whatever fee they want. But for $25, I could ship. I could still, same appellation, same everything, but I could just move my process in Kentucky and ship in here for $25 and have to deal with food processing or ADA. That's what I told my... sometimes the bureaucrats don't think before they open their mouths or try to tell you certain people.
I know.
It is ironic.
That's funny.
But I thought, the ADA goes, can he do that? I'm like, yeah, look at your law. You don't understand the law you're trying to impose. Well, then, what we're doing out here, what we will do. You know, we're going to go work to the easiest place to do business and not have to do your job plus ours. So.
That's amazing.
But this business is, I came from the tobacco business. I thought that was overregulated. But alcohol is complex and probably the most complex in oil right here in the United States. And every state's different. And
Some states though aren't. Some states are very, very pretty friendly. I mean, we've talked to quite a few states during this program, and a lot of wineries. And I'll tell you this: some of these states, the people just love their state government because they, work with them and let them do all sorts of stuff and everything. It just sounds like Ohio is one of the ones on the other end of the scale here.
Well, they're headed that way. We're trying to head them off, but they see something. You know, Ohio's had a huge expansion of wineries in the last 5 years, so I hope they don't kill a good thing, but I think they're looking at it for revenue reasons and not the right reasons. So
yeah, there's a lot of wineries in Ohio, too. I mean...
Yeah, we've had quite a big expansion, so they've been good about expanding them, but I think this... food processing code. They slipped it in on the budget bill. The High Department of Agriculture did. Not this budget bill, the budget bill before. One line sentence, which give them authority. And they're really messing with fire, and they're unwilling and too lazy to write fair code for it. So we've teamed up with a couple other legislators. We got a bill pending. It's called Senate Bill 91, our state legislature. And hopefully, senators get on board if ODA is unwilling to write fair code and get us exempt from ODA and put it back where it belongs under liquor control, which is where it was for the last, since Prohibition ended. But
you should be a farm winery. I mean, don't they have a designation as you being a farm?
No, Kentucky does. Ohio doesn't.
Florida does.
Florida does, but. Yeah, we can't sell farmers markets. We can't. I'll tell you something else. They really want to expand business revenues, like California, Oregon, where we could set up, processing for other vineyards, make their own wine, and then they could sell it at their farm. You know, they wouldn't have to invest all the huge investment equipment and time and money and that huge elephant start a winery. And they only really, put Ohio on the map, but. We're struggling with a lot of issues as we grow here.
I just and there's so many wineries in Ohio that they're having that problem. I'm sitting here shaking my head. It surprises me that the government of Ohio is battling the winery so much there.
Well, yeah, no, I haven't heard anything. I took time out of battling the birds this year. We did have a lot of huge bird pressure this year, so to go to Columbus and meet with the ODA director and Senator Schaefer and our state senator. Our state senator happens to be the president of the Senate, so I hope something gets done. I think it will. Exempt us or make force ODA to write fair cage so everybody knows the rules of the game, not put us under a food processing code, which could be huge cost.
That is so silly.
Yeah.
I mean, that
hey,
really
there's
is.
A spider. There's a spider in your cab must. We need to irradiate it. We need to radiate those graves.
Unbelievable. Well,
it could be.
Seth, tell us all the information about Miranda Nixon Winery, how to contact, phone numbers, location, hours of operation, everything, so our listeners out there, when they're in that area outside of Cincinnati, they can stop by and visit you.
Well, we're open every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, March through December 31st, and hours are Thursday 1 a.m. to 6 p.m., Friday 1 to 8, and Saturday 9 to 11:30. And we do a dinner for our wine customers every Saturday evening. It's a filet mignon or Lenox salmon dinner, which is real popular for people outside the area, drive out, pick up their favorite wine, have dinner with us. So it's a good time, and we're a family operation. My wife and I started this in 2003. We have two sons, 12 and 9. And,
good luck to the boys.
They get vineyard winery tours, and they get that from her mother, not her father. But the boys are real knowledgeable, it's a great time. Everybody has a great time. Comes out there. We're kind of a kept secret. We don't do much advertising marketing. We sell 80% of our wine out the door, so. Yeah. And especially our Cab Sauvignon, and this year with our Norton, it's 100% out the door. So our high-end wines, that's what we're known for, especially our dry reds. So,
well, fantastic.
Come out and check us out.
Do you have a your website is?
www.miranda, M-E-R-A-N-D-A, -nixonwinery.com. The Nixon is my wife's family name. Her maiden name was Nixon, so that's how I came with Miranda Nixon.
And how about, do you have a Facebook page?
Yes, we do. Miranda Nixon Winery. It's on Facebook. Ask us a friend. We're glad to have you.
Fantastic. Well, Seth, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
On Twitter also.
Twitter also?
Okay.
Who does the Twitter?
On Twitter. Tina does, my wife.
Uh-huh.
And Facebook, she'll update on newest releases and Twitter. So, especially our homepage here at the winery.
So, well, Seth, thank you so much for joining us on the program tonight. We really appreciate it. And best of luck to you out there at Miranda Nixon Winery. And if I'm ever in the area again, I will definitely look you up.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we'll be glad to have you, Ron. Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks a lot now. Bye.
All right.
Very nice. Interesting information. Now, we hope to find some more interesting information here because I notice we have another winery on the line or another person from another winery. We have Nancy from Kincaid Ridge Winery. And let me tell you a little bit about Kincaid Ridge Winery. Kincaid Ridge Winery really has a wonderful website. I pulled out all sorts of information off the website. There's all sorts of stuff there. They've really put a lot of effort and energy into the website. If anyone wants to know anything about winemaking or contacts or anything, I highly recommend the website. And Nancy and I have been emailing back and forth a little bit here, and she said they got a great story to tell. So we're going to bring Nancy on here. And Nancy, you with us?
I am, and also so is the wine grower, Ron Barrett, my partner.
Ron made it too.
Yes, Ron made it too. indeed.
Fantastic. That's great. I'm glad you joined us, Ron.
Well, I did make it back from the barn a little earlier tonight. So.
Oh, that's fine. You're here with
I
us.
I told Mike I decided not to clean the shotgun tonight so I could
be
back
there
here.
You go. Well, we're happy that you put us over
here,
the shotgun.
You know. Pardon?
We're happy you put us over the shotgun.
Yeah. Well, you're one step ahead of the starlings.
Well, Ron, a little history. We actually grew grapes in Oregon for over 10 years. We grew Pinot Noir there. And then we were looking for a new challenge, and we looked at several areas around the country and settled on southern Ohio mainly because of the soil. It's similar to Saint-Emilion in France, and it's on a southeast-facing ridge draining to a river, and it's in a very historic viticultural area that was made famous by Nicholas Longworth.
Mm-hmm. So continue.
Yeah, I just add to that historically, in the mid-19th century, almost 50% of the wine production in the United States was along the river here, mostly on the Ohio side, but Kentucky was fairly active as well.
So how long have you all been at this location?
Not that long, but it feels like it some days.
Since 1998.
98? Well, that's a long time. That's why
it
15
is.
Years.
The vineyard was planted in 1999.
Well, I've been growing grapes for 25 years prior to this Oregon, and been around the industry for about 35, but I quit engineering in the mid-80s. And I've been doing this since.
Uh-huh. Where were you in Oregon? What part?
Willamette Valley.
Oh, were you? Oh, wow.
Northern, yeah.
We haven't talked about Oregon yet in our list of going through. I think that's next week. We'll be talking about Oregon wine.
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, then Oregon, yeah.
It's
we're
really
be
nice
on.
That you're covering other areas, you know, because people often focus just on the West Coast and the East Coast. But, for example, there's a website called theother46.com, so that's kind of fun to take a look at because things are happening all over the country.
Oh, yes, it's amazing.
As far as Oklahoma goes, be sure you get a hold of the Dos Oakies down there. Those two characters are pretty amazing. I met them years ago.
We have found that to be true all around this country. We have, like I say, we're working our way alphabetically through the country, and it is just amazing some of the characters that are running wineries around this country. So
that's a fact. I guess we qualify.
I always say all winemakers are crazy in their own individual way.
You know, we have to be. If we aren't, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. I mean, just
yeah.
Well,
but
we're
it's that
a little
one
unique
moment there when somebody says, "Ooh, this is great," that makes you feel good. That's
well, we're a little unique in that we are virtually all state here, and we're all vinifera, and we're in the ultra premium wine business, and we've got a little different mojo than most folks. We don't really have a tasting room. Most of our wine goes to fine wine shops and restaurants. So we're a little different gig down here.
And we don't have a restaurant, and we don't sell T-shirts either.
And right now the tasting room isn't even open at the winery because we closed down for Crush. So we're kind of a California boutique transported to Ohio. But I chose this, as Nancy mentioned, for the soils. I felt that we could make extraordinary wine down here, and we have made some nice wines. Nancy can tell you about some of it, but I will relate one tasting. Correct me, Nancy, if I'm wrong, but one of our restaurant customers in Columbus shipped some wine to California, our 08 Cabernet Franc, and they slipped it in a tasting with $100 California Cabernets, and they were using a point system out there of some sort, and it came out 3 points better than anything else.
Whoa.
Oh.
And these were sophisticated folks. So that gives you an idea of what our target market looks like.
Actually, there's a famous wine writer in England called Tom Stevenson. He edits the New Sotheby's Wine Encyclopedia, And he puts out a paperback called The Wine Report every year. And in the back of that book are the top exciting 100 wine finds in the world. And we've made that list twice, once for a Cabernet Franc and once for a Viognier Roussan blend.
Wow.
And the Cabernet Franc year, only 12 American wineries were on the list of 100.
Wow, very good. I love a Cabernet Franc. You and I need to talk about me send you my port and me getting your Cabernet Franc.
That sounds great.
I mean, well, I do a strawberry port down here and that I'm very, very proud of. So we need to talk about doing a little exchange of a bottle here.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Soil.
I'm sorry,
go on.
I will mention that, you know, we do have wine shops that will ship throughout the country, so we do have people that will ship to Florida and other places.
I don't want to talk to wine shops. I want to talk to you.
Well, shipping to Florida is apparently a felony under our license, so...
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Well, Florida has changed their laws somewhat.
I know.
That used to be the case.
Wait a week. We'll change it again.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, one of the objectives when we moved here was to try to get some other people involved and to try to build up the industry down here because I felt there was a lot of opportunity, and it has been satisfying because now we have 4 wineries. I wish we had more locally, and we did help Miranda Nixon get started, Harmony Hill, La Vigna. And they all contribute a little different element to the puzzle here. Everybody's different, and that's one of the appealing things about the wine business. Seth does different things than we do. Bill loves music, so he has a music venue over there, and La Vigna is really, you talk about boutique, they're even more so than us. So it's... it's an interesting mix.
Well, I've been to Southern Ohio about 4 years ago. Visited some wineries down there. I actually had a chance to visit Harmony Hill and spent some time. You know, well, Friday evening, my wife and I spent some time there when they had a thing going, and got to know Bill and all the people around there and all that. Had a great time. Just really a wonderful time. And he made his apologies. He was going to join tonight, but he had a couple of meetings he had to go to. But it was just the wines he was putting out were just really, really, again, boutique, nice, pleasant, just full of body. I love the wines that he was doing. And he was saying that that's what's happening in that whole area around there at the time. And like I said, it's 4 years ago, and he was very up on all that stuff.
Well, Bill does a nice job, and he actually I would say that if you came back now, you'd find a higher level of sophistication.
He was growing. He had some Norton in the ground at the time. Do you know if he's still doing the Norton?
No, Bill's never had any Norton in the ground.
He had Norton.
You're thinking maybe of Chamberson.
No, he had Norton grape when I was there 4 years ago.
Oh, those had to be purchased. Bill's never grown Norton.
Okay, he might have purchased some then.
Yeah, I think he probably purchased it. Yeah, he did buy some. You know, Norton is Norton, and
yeah.
I'm not a particular fan of Norton. I know that's a blasphemy in Missouri, but an acquaintance of John Held's, and he'd probably shoot me, but I'm not enthusiastic. And Bill, I think, has dropped Norton from the program. He makes a number of different wines,
right?
But not Norton, as far as I know, and actually just. Prior to this program, I was going to give Bill a call and check in with him. So,
he's not in this evening. He's at a meeting.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what we grow, though. We grow Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Syrah. We sometimes have a varietal bottling of Petit Verdot, Viognier, Roussan, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Semillon. And
wow.
What am I missing, Ron? Is that it?
Did you mention Chardonnay?
Oh, and some Chardonnay, yeah.
Everybody
knows
Chardonnay.
We have an experimental block, and the Albarino this year came out beautiful, just gorgeous.
The how many acres do you have planted total?
It's close spaced. It's it's high density viticulture, and it's a little over 5 acres.
Oh wow!
It's up on the ridge tops, and it's expensive viticulture because the ridges aren't that wide, and so as a result, the row lengths are short. 5.1 acres. I've got about 140 rows.
Wow.
Makes for a lot of turning at the end of the rows.
Yes, it does.
It's takes a while to spray, but.
I should mention, if you go to YouTube and search for Kincaid Ridge, there's a little movie called A Vineyard Year that has been viewed about 34,000 times. And it shows everything from cane pruning through bottling through harvest. It's a little 10-minute movie that shows our production.
You know, your website is phenomenal. I love your website. You have
I do it myself.
You did it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy's next software.
I'm out of control with the website. I can't stop.
I'm an ex-engineer
as well.
I told this to a lot of the, I mentioned this to listeners here, that your website, if someone wants to, you know, do some home winemaking, there's some great information on there to do that. If they want to check in about Ohio wines, there's a lot of great information on there. You just have all sorts of links and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it really is a very informative, very interesting, concise website. I do enjoy it. In fact,
there is a viticulture enology link, and if anyone is thinking of growing grapes, Ron has his top 10 list of viticultural mistakes. So that's worth reading if anyone is ever thinking of planting a vineyard.
And it is a good read. I saw that and I read it myself. He also has some links to some companies in there that are very, very helpful. I've used almost every one of those companies getting supplies and stuff for my winery. So. There's some very good information on there.
Well,
so
I'm glad to hear that. I have been lax in updating that. But I'll tell you, the spray program is what's taken off. I was at a conference in Lancaster, PA, here in August, and I was surprised. People came up to me and they said, you know, I really appreciate the fact that you. Update your spray program every year on the website, and it's been it's really saved us a lot of money, and it works fantastically. And I've that's one of my specialties, and it's great to know that the time I spend is used by somebody. You know,
it is. I see. There's a lot of good information on there. So. You know, anyone out there want to use that stuff? I mean, any of the listeners, check out Kincaid Ridge Vineyard, or KincaidRidge.com is actually the website. And,
yes, KINKEAD, Ridge.com. We're also on Facebook, Kincaid Ridge, and I'm also on Twitter as Ohio Wine Lady.
Oh, very good. Ron, the soil there, what soil are you?
Well, quick study. We're on the outer ridge rim of the bluegrass, and the soils are University of Kentucky geologist told me 600 million years old or something, and so it's very old limestone, moderate pH, but fundamentally it's 3 feet of calcareous clay, more or less, and then it's broken limestone. And calcareous shale for hundreds of feet, probably 400 or 500. And as a result, the vine roots go way down into it. We never have drought problems. Winter damage, one of the things I've learned moving to the east is that internal soil drainage is incredibly important in winter damage. And as a result, we don't hill up, we don't do anything, and you get a really rough year, things like Syrah and Viognier, varieties like that are very sensitive to winter damage, so we do get hurt. But when you look at Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Riesling, of course, I don't know if Nancy mentioned, we're one of the few people who grow Riesling. You know, winter hardy varieties are bulletproof. I don't have to do replants but to speak of. But, of course, when you start talking about Syrah and Viognier and Sauvignon Blanc, there are problems. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we are in a continental climate. And so, although it's not nearly as continental as farther west in Kentucky, even certainly Indiana, Missouri. So we're I'll go into the weeds a little bit here. The National Weather Service has a continentality index, and it declines as you go up the Ohio River until you get here, and then it increases as you go toward Pittsburgh. So we're in a sweet spot. And we don't get hit by Atlantic hurricanes, generally. And
we don't either, so, generally.
Yeah, well, yeah, but those poor guys up in Pennsylvania, I've got some friends up there who are in a world of hurt. But anyway, we haven't had, you know, we had trouble here. September was not nice for us either, but at least we didn't get 2 feet of rain. We're in pretty good shape, and as I sit here, it's 67 degrees. Well, I was going to say it's twilight, but it's just about dark 30 here, and it's a beautiful evening. This is vintage weather, and so I'm going to be picking Cabernet Franc probably Tuesday. And I think we're going to make some really nice red wine this year, which has my juices flowing.
I can imagine.
I think it could be the best vintage we've had since 08 for red wine.
Oh, wow. What is the influence of the cold and hot and all that where you're located? Does the Ohio River influence your temperatures, or are you too far away from it?
You know, it's not Lake Erie. In the spring, I don't think it does much. The big benefit of us, for us, is that we're at 900 and some feet, and the river's at 400 and some feet.
Oh.
So we have incredible air drainage. We're on the ridgetops over the Ohio, so we don't have frost problems to speak of. But,
that's good.
But as far as I think the benefit for us is that the water is warm enough that it probably buys us a degree or two in the fall, so we're able to skate through on those little adventures in early October that generally occur where you get defoliation. We manage to skate through, so we typically don't get defoliated until November.
Wow.
And 1st of November is generally it. You know, from the 1st through the 4th, seems like almost every year. And so as a result, we've got Petit Verdot out there, and it's funny, we picked it almost every year, but sometime between the 27th of October and maybe the 1st of November.
Huh.
It just...
so you wait as long as you can, you've never had a problem?
No, and Verdot's a tough one because it's late. It's easy to ripen in eastern Virginia, but on a typical vintage. But for us to get everything dead ripe, and we sit on them until they're ripe. And I mean really ripe. I mean, we make wine. We're a little unusual, I suppose, but our wines, the last few years, the alcohols have really been climbing. We're typically 15 alcohol.
Wow.
I've had to water the red wine in 08, 2010, 07. So, you know, three vintages. I've had to water it just so I can get it dry. But we've typically been running 15 alcohol because I just won't pick until the flavors come around. And those three vintages, they didn't come around till then.
What bricks are you picking at?
26.
Wow.
Yeah, California. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's,
that is. That's California bricks. So you're right.
It's amazing. But, no, the vineyard loves to do that as it's gotten older. Alcohols have gone up. And I'd like to make lower alcohol wine, but I just can't bring myself to pick when the flavors aren't there. So, and I mean the proof is in the pudding. I mean we got, you know, I mentioned the California thing, and then there was that thing in Missouri, Nancy. What was that, the Jefferson Cup? Or?
Oh yeah, we won only 20 American wines out of 600 won a Jefferson Cup. And we've had the double gold from American Wine Society.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I often have people take wine abroad or, you know, taste it blind, and people are stunned when it's from Ohio. They just can't believe it.
The satisfaction for me is, there's not a lot of money in this business. You know that.
Never has been.
Yeah, so you got to get your satisfaction elsewhere. And my real satisfaction is when people have fun with the wine, and when somebody takes a bottle out, you know, like this bottle that went into California. We sent some to some friends, wine growers in Arizona. We know quite a bit about the Arizona wine industry. And by the way, that'd be a great place for you to talk to some people.
Well, they started alphabetically, so they've probably done that already.
We talked to Arizona. And in fact, I even had an opportunity to visit some wineries down in Arizona a couple years ago when I was down there.
Yeah.
And it's really strange when you're driving down to the middle of the Arizona high desert in southern Arizona.
I know, with a tumbleweed.
And you see this enormous sign on the side of the road that says, "Welcome to wine country." Arizona.
You know,
is
you must have been around Sonoida then, but
yes.
Anyway, I get a lot of satisfaction out of even just on a small scale, you know, having a customer coming up at me and say, "Well, we put your wine in a brown bag," and people were bringing all kinds of expensive wines into this tasting. I just stuck, Kincaid Ridge Cabernet in there just for the heck of it. And your wine was the favorite. And, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to show that fine wine can be made here. It is difficult. It's not California, you know. But and we have our tough vintages. So do other wine regions, but we have more in our share probably. And when we have a good vintage or we make a nice wine, it's great to have a little bit of fun with it. And that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and having the enjoyment that you do making the wines, and that's obvious in just how you speak of it and all that, the enjoyment is really shows through in the quality of what you're doing, and that helps a lot. If you enjoy what you do, then the wine itself picks up, I believe, on that enjoyment and presents itself even better. So, it's something that you should be proud of. It's something you should be very proud of. Do you use oak, stainless steel, both? What do you?
Okay, white wines, this is just because of my prejudice. White wines, to me, should be refreshing. Stimulating on the palate, and so I don't like barrel fermentation. I'm one of those people who just doesn't do it. So all our white wines are stainless steel.
Uh-huh.
No ML. And red wines are serious. 18-month barrel program. So we have two vintages in the winery at once. Fair amount of new oak. Mixture of French and American, about 30-35% French. The best barrels I can buy, which means extra fine grain, extra seasoning, et cetera. It's a lot of money, but that's what we do in order to try to make nice wine. And for the price, say our wines are too cheap. I mean, our wines are $20. Our red wine. We may break out here and go to 22 this year for Petit Verdot, but nonetheless, you know, it's an expensive barrel program for $20 wine.
Right. You use the American oak. Where are you getting from, Kentucky?
No, actually, is World Cooperage barrels are what we're using mostly. I use some Kentucky cooperages here in the past, but I actually have been sourcing barrels out of Missouri. Now they get wood from a lot of different areas. I don't find much difference. I know there are people who think they do, but I don't see much difference from wood from different areas. The big difference I see is in the grain structure.
Uh-huh.
Extra fine, you know, really fine grain wood from Minnesota or fine grade wood from Missouri. I don't see much difference.
A lot of people are praising the Minnesota barrels now. They're praising Minnesota for what they're getting, the taste, and also for the grain and everything. I've had quite a few wineries that are just really sold on Minnesota oak now. So it's...
Well, I'll tell you, my observation is that it's more important that the cooperage has a good aging program and a good toasting program.
Right. Toast makes a big difference.
Huge. Huge. I've tried Minnesota oak from several different cooperages and in one case from the same stave mill up in Minnesota, and there are enormous differences.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I do visit cooperages. Actually, Nancy and I, when we first got started, we actually went to the cooperage to pick up our barrels.
Ah.
But
it was like the Clampets coming home, you know, with the trailer, you know, and I was really embarrassed, you know, and then I heard later that it's really trendy to pick up your own barrels in California.
Yeah, but I think they thought we were nuts when he pulled up there with the trailer, you know, and we had a bunch of barrel racks in the back of the truck, and it did look pretty shabby on the way home, but we made it. With barrels hanging over the end of the trailer.
I mean, it was fishtailing. The trailer was fishtailing. It was really scary.
Yeah, there was
scary.
Too much weight behind the axle.
But you made it.
Drove slowly. You know, it was like driving a U-Haul trailer or something that's overloaded. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll tell you, it's the whole barrel thing is it's very interesting. I mean, barrels are magic, and we've been told that we're foolish at our price points to stick with cooperage, and particularly with an 18-month program and with 30, you know, to 40% new oak. But we're doing it.
And it's expensive.
It is expensive, and it's a lot of work.
Yes.
You know, to keep hygiene in place, and we're, you know, we pride ourselves on making clean white wine, no Brett, problems with acetobacter, things like that. You know,
uh-huh.
So we're, but you know, it's somewhere along the line. I think it does pay dividends. Hope so.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously it has from what Nancy just said about what your some of the praises you have received from publications and awards and everything. It obviously is working. That's absolutely fantastic. Your reasoning, I was curious, what style do you make that? Do you make it semi-sweet, dry, very dry?
Again, winemaker's prejudice comes into play here. I think Riesling needs a little bit of residual sugar because there's an Riesling has really high phenolics in the skins.
Oh yeah.
And it's very difficult to make Riesling without a slight bit of bitterness. And it's amazing what 1.25% residual sugar would do to ameliorate that. The other choice is, of course, if you want to make really dead dry Riesling, is to fine it, but then you strip the aromas.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You really have, in my mind, destroyed one of the huge benefits of Riesling. So I put a minor amount of residual sugar in the wine. I stick the fermentation, of course. I don't add sugar back, and have enough acid in the wine to balance the sugar, and it actually makes a very nice food wine. It's not bad at all for food, but you get 2% residual sugar, and I don't think you can put enough acid in the wine to really make it work with food. And I really ought to mention Nancy is a certified chef. She went to culinary school.
Oh, really?
So we are kind of
foodies.
Yeah, yeah, and our weight sort of shows that.
Hey.
You know? My weight shows it.
I see your pictures. I have the advantage. You have pictures on your website, and I've seen you both standing there.
You don't think I put bad pictures on the website, do you?
No.
Only good ones.
Mike put my picture up for the All About Wine, and he put a bad one up. So we've been discussing that.
Fire him.
Yeah. No, he does all the work. I can't do that. Yeah.
You know, I should just mention a couple of our special events before we run out of time. We have the annual barrel tasting the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and then our typical white wine releases in May.
Well, the annual barrel tasting, by the way, we now include virtually everybody down here who makes a barrel-aged red wine. And, you know, you had Seth Miranda on. He's a key ingredient here. You know, it's a community event.
It is. And then the May Memorial Day is our white wine release, and Labor Day is our red wine release and annual vineyard tour. And I just want to say to you that I think it's so great that you're covering the states, because one of my favorite quotes came from Dorothy Gator and Brecker before they left the Wall Street Journal, and it was, "All fine wine should have a sense of place."
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote.
Yes, yeah. Well, we discovered, Mike and I realized, we've talked about on the program here, we've been doing this for, about 3 years now, I believe.
Oh.
And we spent some time talking about the world and different wine regions around the world, and we agreed that if we start go through the United States state by state, there is so many wineries out there and so much we can learn. And, you know, the program is listened to by a lot of people on archives and stuff, but I tell you, I have learned so much about wine and winemaking and grape growing and all that in this country. It's fascinating. If the listeners don't listen to all the archives and catch up on the knowledge, it's too bad for them, because there's so much stuff that's going on in this country as far as wine goes. It's phenomenal. And so we love doing this. This is something that is just, it's great. And it's great to have you on with us, to join us here and share your experiences and all that. It's something we really do enjoy.
Well, we're happy to be here.
Mike, you have any questions or anything for him?
I was just going through the website. I mean, they have...
I know.
you've put a lot of work into this. There's a lot of information, and I love the awards that you've won at Finger Lakes. What was the
gold medal for the Cabernet Sauvignon in 08?
Yes.
Yeah.
And your Syrah had great reviews and everything.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's amazing.
We're so small that we don't enter a lot of competitions, but usually when we do enter competitions, they're international competitions, and we usually do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You're not,
oh, yeah, sounds good.
You may be surprised to hear I really don't care about competitions. You know,
I'm a gold medal junkie.
Yeah, I could care less, you know. My competition is the thing that I get satisfied with is what I explained to you earlier, and that is when we have a customer who really has fun with the wine. You know, they're the ultimate judges as far as I'm concerned. And I you know, wine competitions are, I do some judging, and I know about the flaws in wine competitions, and people just shop wine competitions until they get an award.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, it not that they're meaningless. I mean, AWS does a good job, and other people do a good job,
okay.
But my be-all and all is not it's just not wine competitions, it's people. And people and their perceptions of wine and what they like. You know, we don't make sweet red wine, for example. I just won't do it. But I don't like it, I won't do it. But, you know, there are people who love sweet red wine. Well, who am I to say?
We
live
in Florida, and we got muscadine.
And I love muscadine. But but the people who turn their nose up at muscadine are legion, you know. But, and it's a shame because they're missing a lot. But my point is that who's to say that somebody who likes muscadine is just not, you know, worthy. I mean, it's just foolish. If somebody likes a particular product, they like sweet red wine or they like muscadine or something, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
No.
And that's, and the fact that it might not get an award at some competition is, who cares, as far as I'm concerned.
I tell people that come into the winery down here, I say there's two types of wines in the world, the type you like and the type you don't like.
Yeah,
and that
exactly.
Pretty much sums it up.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
Everything else after that you can learn and enjoy more. But the bottom line is you either like it or you don't like it.
Right.
And so if you happen to like very sweet wines, great for you, because that's what you found that you like. So, or if you like the heavy reds, that's okay too. So, there's all sorts of – yeah, and Bill – Ron – I'm sorry. Ron, I agree with you. I've never entered anything into competition either. I've had people come in. I've had people who are judges in wine competitions come in and tell me that I should put our port in a competition because we would win first prize. And I go, well, we don't enter. And he says, I'm a judge. This would win a first prize ribbon. And, you know, that to me – is worth a lot more than entering it. So we just never have entered competitions.
Well, you know, I don't do the marketing and sales.
I'm a metal junkie.
And you realize
the line of fire. I just lift heavy objects, you know.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, understanding it is the first step, okay?
Yeah.
Well, Nancy and Ron, it was absolutely wonderful to have you guys on the program tonight. Your website is phenomenal. I repeat again, anyone out there who wants to learn more about wines or growing or any of that stuff, the website, we give a lot of credit to Nancy on that. Let's see, where's here we go. Let me hit my button here for this.
I will mention this if you want to know about the horror stories as far as having a vineyard in a winery, you can read my blog which is on Typepad, KincaidRidgeWinery.typepad.com, and that's where I put all the horror stories.
Okay. Somewhat
expurgated, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, I love my website. I have a lot of fun doing that.
It's great. Really. Anything else, Mike?
No, we just want to make sure we get... I'm looking at the blog now. We just want to make sure that we get contact information... Okay, there's wine trails in that area. Are you listed on the wine trails? I mean, you don't
have a... Well, it's a little complicated. There's an organization that's members only that has a wine trail, but we're really not on that trail. Okay. So we've kind of banded together down here, the non-members, and done our own thing.
And you don't have a tasting room. That's correct.
No, we taste right in the winery on a 6-foot table.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, we're upscale. I mean, we don't have 2x12s on top of barrels.
I put a tablecloth on.
You know, like California, we don't just do it on top of barrels. I mean, we actually have a table. So.
There is a calendar on the website you can look at and see when we're open.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, give us all the information. Give us your hours, your website, your Twitter address, your Facebook address.
Okay, the website is KincaidRidge.com. And
you better make sure spell it. Yeah.
KincaidRidge.com, named after William Kincaid, who settled our road in the 1790s.
Oh.
And there's a calendar. There's a What's New page that I update every month and a calendar. In good years, we're open on summer Saturdays. Otherwise, we're always open for the Memorial Day release of the white wine, the Labor Day release of the red wine with the annual vineyard tour, and Saturday after Thanksgiving. And the Twitter address is Wine Lady Ohio, and Facebook, just search for Kincaid Ridge, and you'll get to our page, and you can like it.
Fantastic. And, great stuff on the website. I've said this over and over again. I keep saying while I'm talking to you and while you're talking to me, I'm surfing through your website, and I'm finding new stuff every time I click on something.
Oh, great. That's super.
It's really, really a great website. So
thank you.
Well, thank you both for taking the time out and joining us tonight.
It's great to talk to you both.
And I will be emailing you because I'm very serious about this exchange of my strawberry port for your Cabernet Franc.
We can work it out.
Sounds real good.
All right.
Best of luck to you in the harvest, Ron, and everything that you do. Nancy, great website. Keep it up. We'll look forward to the changes and all that. And if we're ever in the area, we will definitely stop by and visit with you guys.
I hope you will.
Sounds great.
Thank you very much now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Very, very cool. Very good.
That was great.
Yeah. I was just looking at her blog. She has her top story is the Cadillac of picking buckets, and they show a worker, I don't know who that is, but they show somebody sitting on a plain 5-gallon bucket, and then they said it was uncomfortable. It has an uncomfortable rim edge, and so they added a cushion to the top of it. So now they
said, those buckets do have a rim edge too. I can understand that. Yeah.
So this is pretty good. It's a lot of pictures on the blog. A lot of good information again, and very cool. Another very interesting website. Man, really busy over there.
This website is just, and it goes into a lot of stuff. Ron contributes a lot of stuff to this too. He's got a whole bunch of information on there that, if you're looking for more of a technical aspect of it, it's on there. And then, more of just, different things. There's all that. It is really, I am quite impressed with this website.
Yeah, very well done. Very well done. What do we have? Oh my gosh, it's that late already. I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that.
We got 5 minutes left.
Okay, you have a you have a wine fest this
wine
Saturday,
fest.
October the 8th. It would be, I believe.
We sure do.
Let's step out for about a minute and 15 seconds. I'll play this real quick, and then we'll be right back.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
That was a little... It's like there was a lot of static or something on that.
A lot of static. Yeah, I heard on this end, too. Yeah.
It was probably on a bad AM radio or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Long distance. But 4 miles west of Interstate 75, very easy to get to, right off of State Road 52. And just be there Saturday for a great wine fest. And, you know, be there every day. It's
yeah.
It's a great day there.
Come by any day. Yeah, there's quite a few vendors, got live music. A new musician, he's been in. He played an event for us. He's come back this week. Or you can, we got our website and we got our Facebook page. All About Wine also has a Facebook page. So you can always get in touch with us there. Mike, I'll let you tell about that stuff. So.
Okay. Oh, you mean now? Yeah, you can go to Facebook. Facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. There's no spaces in between any of that. Just go to Facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR for Blog Talk Radio. And you can like us on there. And Ron posts a lot of show information, what's going on. And I subscribe to it, so I get it on my phone whenever he posts items on there. And it's really, really cool to keep up with the show. And, you know, chat with us on there as well. Send your comments and feedback on our Facebook page. And we'd love to have you. And so we're finally making our presence there as a show. I know the winery has been there for a while, but we got the show on there. So we're all good to go. Let's see. What else? I think, yeah.
Pretty much done. I mean, actually, we went the whole time on the program.
Yeah. Now I think you said next week was Oklahoma, but aren't we doing other parts?
We're still
of Ohio?
In Ohio. Yeah.
Okay.
We're still in Ohio. We'll be in Ohio for a couple more weeks. There's at least three major areas in Ohio. We just covered the southeast, the southern part. A lot of wineries down there. 17, I think, in that area alone. We covered those. We're going to be doing a couple more areas, so we're not done yet with Ohio. I was a little premature on my.
Somebody was asked, we were talking to, I forgot, was it Nancy and Ron or somebody, and that we were going to do Oklahoma next week. So, yeah, I'm still here. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
You sound like you faded out there.
Oh, okay. Maybe, well, it's getting to be that time where I start fading, so I don't know.
Is that?
Yeah. Go back to transparency. There, I forgot where we're going with that. But, yeah, we were talking to Ron and Nancy, I think, and they asked, we were talking about the shows, and I think we went and said we were doing, I don't know, we went to Oklahoma next week, and I thought, no, I don't think it's.
No. We still got Ohio for a couple more weeks,
yeah.
So next week is what date?
That would be October the 13th.
So, join us next week for Ohio, Central Ohio. We're going to go up, still cover Ohio. So we'll still be in Ohio next week.
Great.
And maybe for a couple more weeks after this. So.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I appreciate the, you know, send us some feedback and let us know what you think of the show. You can ask questions for a future show or just, you know, ask questions about the show or about, you know, Ron, the winery, what we've talked about already. Just send us a feedback at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And be sure to visit Florida Estates Winery on the internet at floridaestateswines.com. Subscribe to their newsletter. It comes out about every 2 weeks. and with good information in it, and they don't spam you or anything like that. It's a great read, and you'll enjoy it every time it comes out. So we'll see you all next week. Thank you all. I've got 7 seconds.
Me too. Thank you, everyone.
We'll see you. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, now it's on record. And this shows 1 hour of recording left. I thought we were over at 9. Well, live at 8:30, but it says we're recording now. You there? Mike?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I'm on, wait a second, because I'm not in the green room anymore. I'm on the,
No, you're on the mic. Now, we're recording now. If we get over on that mic, we're on live program here, because it shows that it's recording.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I'm going to go back in the green room. The only way I can hear you is if I went out. Hold on. Let me go back. Hey, this will be a popular show.
Let me go back.
We're having issues.
We're having issues.